it's a really valuable service, and it's well worth those of us who can afford to pay, to pay.
Welcome to the Circle Holding Podcast with me, Julia Davis.
And me, Tessa Venuti-Sanderson. We are the co-authors of the book Circle Holding, A Practical Guide to Facilitating Talking Circles.
We would love for you to join us for free talks, question and answer sessions, all about the art of holding circle. You can find these at circleholding.org.
Hi, I'm Tessa and I'm here with Julia, and today we thought we would talk about money, because in our trainings, so often the issue of what to charge, how much to charge, whether to charge anything at all comes up. So we're going to dive into different aspects of why it's really important to give this a lot of consideration when you're running your talking circle.
Actually, the fact that both Tessa and I are, what did you call it, mumpreneurs, throughout our experience as circle holders, we've parented along the way. So we've always had to juggle that life with the kids and running businesses and doing things where our time was taken up. And it actually mattered quite a lot that our time was accounted for financially when we were running circles.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you go to a circle and it's a good circle and it flows easily, it can seem like quite an easy thing. But what sometimes people don't realise is all the preparation that goes into it. You know, it might be liaising with the venue to hire it and taking things to the venue to make it comfortable and preparing what to talk about and replying to emails. There's a lot of work that goes on in the background. And I really want people to value the amount of work that it takes to be a circle facilitator. And it's not always going to be appropriate to charge an upfront amount, depending on who your demographic is. But there can be other ways that you can be paid as a circle facilitator to make sure that you don't burn out, that this is something that's sustainable.
Yeah, and very much like yoga, there are lots of people out there who aren't charging. So I think Gather the Women is a completely voluntary organisation. That doesn't mean that all circles have to be done on that basis. And a large proportion of the circle holders that I've spoken to and been with, they may not have been paid for by the participants directly, but there was remuneration for the people who actually ran the circle themselves. And it's good to look at an infrastructure in that way, because if you want your circle to be free at the point of contact, then it can be really valuable to ensure that those people who are involved with sustainability have a method for them to be paid.
Yeah. I mean, I think in the Becoming Mums episode with Liz, she talks at length about how to get funding. So that if it's going to be a major barrier for people to come to your talking circle, get the money from somewhere else, then you can be paid. If you've got artists coming in to support a beautiful project, they can be paid as well. But I know for a fact that my women's circle wouldn't have been going for 10 years if I hadn't charged, because at the beginning I was doing it by donation, and I gave a sort of guideline for a suggested donation, but I found it really varied from person to person. And in the early days, I didn't always cover the cost of the venue. So it wasn't even that I wasn't making money, I was out of pocket, and that just wasn't going to be sustainable.
Andy, actually, it's a career choice that he's made, that he gets paid for, you know, as a job to ensure that there's participation in democracy. And not only is he paid, but the authorities involved pay the participants, because what they're aiming to do is to make a better society for the people who are living in that area. And the way to do that is to ensure that all voices are heard, or as many voices as possible. And those voices that need to be heard aren't going to pay for the opportunity to tell the local authority what's best for the local authority. So actually there's payment happening of the circle attendees and of the circle holders. So that's quite an unusual thing to happen in a circle as far as money goes.
Yeah, I think it's just really important to be very intentional about, you know, who is it that you want to come, what their needs are, and what's going to be a barrier. Or actually, is it by having a charge to come, you're getting more buy-in? Because I've noticed that a lot on things, that if you run a sort of free event, people love the idea of coming, but at the last minute something might crop up and they're like, oh well, I'll go next time. Whereas if they've paid a certain amount, there's that buy-in and they think, oh well, I wouldn't want to waste my money, I'm going to make it, even if it's raining or even if it's snowing or there's a heat wave, I'm still going to go because I put my money into the event. I think it's having that clarity around, you know, what is going to help your intended participants to come, but also what's sustainable for you. You don't want to burn out because, or start resenting the circle. So really thinking about, you know, the costs that are involved and, you know, are there refreshments, are there venue costs, all those things are incredibly important. The other thing that really strikes me is that people often worry about sort of competition from other circles. Oh, there's already another circle in my town. Should I look at how much they charge and charge the same? But I think it's really going back to those, you know, what's it going to cost you? How much do you want to be able to have at the end so that if you want to, you can go to supervision or attend a circle as a participant yourself? That's always the way I look at it first, is what do I need to make to have this continue?
And I think when I started running teacher circles at Finchley Yoga, my local studio, I was doing it by donation, and it was a really small amount of donation. And it was interesting because some of the people who came along were just so grateful to have something that was by donation and a really low donation. And then other teachers were coming to me saying, this is so much time, effort, and energy that you're putting into this. You should be charging a lot more for it. And over time, I felt like I got into a bit of a bind because I didn't know how to move from it being by donation to it being something that actually reflected the time, effort, and energy and value that I was giving to other people. I think the balance had changed from being something that I really felt was a value to me and so much value to me that was really, really worthwhile doing regardless of payment, to something where I was providing so much value to other people and working so hard because it grew. So something that starts really small doesn't necessarily involve so much time, effort, and energy. And when you're starting something out, you don't realize maybe how to do it. So you start by not necessarily putting as much time, effort, and energy into it. I think when I first ran it, it was like word of mouth, speaking to a few local people. And then they got to the stage where I was doing like Zoom events before to let people know about it. And I was in contact with people throughout London. People were coming from all across town to do it. I had to manage my numbers because there could potentially be more people than I had space for. So there were all these things, these considerations that I hadn't taken into account that were all taking time, effort, and energy. And as much as I was meeting amazing people and having a really lovely, fruitful experience, I did get to that point where I was thinking, well, do I resent this? Do I think that this isn't okay? And then lockdown happened and it all changed.
Yeah. I was just thinking, I love it on the trainings when people come who are maybe in a employment, they're in a paid job where they want to bring in circles to that post. So I can think of different charities where they're working with a particular group of people who have an issue, and they want to be able to enable them to share their experiences. And that's beautiful because the circle would take place within their job, they're not having then to charge the participants. They're being paid for their time. And it reminds me of when I used to work in academia, and, you know, you would go and be invited to give talks or all sorts of activities that were sort of encompassed within your role. And you were able to give that time because there was payments. Whereas I think if somebody is an entrepreneur or a mumpreneur, it's going to be different because there's not that kind of bigger organization around you that is there to help send you on training and pay for the training, or all of that comes from your own pocket. I think, you know, when participants go to a circle, you know, just having in the back of their mind, you know, that person's probably done training, they might have insurance that they need to pay. There's all these hidden costs that I think people don't even realize.
Yeah, I was thinking that, and it just made me think about organizations where there's clear work that gets a revenue stream and work that doesn't get a revenue stream. So you can see that it's really important that people have social interaction, that circles occur, that opportunities to speak and be listened to occur within an organization. And it is really interesting to see whether people actually have defined roles that help them do that, or whether it falls to the person that they feel is the most nurturing member of the team, the most friendly person. So, but are you being recognized for it at the same level as somebody who's brought in a new client? It's about how we value society. And in the world that we live in today, caring roles aren't valued in the same way financially as profit-driven roles. And circle holding is a caregiving role. So do we want to do it in a capacity as being a lovely person, or do we want to do it in a capacity where we're going to get paid for it? And sometimes what helps you make the decision is, am I going to be doing this as a business, or am I going to be doing this as a pleasure? For instance, I mean, we've got our book club. And our book club, we're going to put a lot of time, effort, and energy into. We're going to be really thinking about each of the chapters, what they're going to get out of them. So that's a very different type of book club to the one I have my mates come along to, and we all meet in the cafe and talk about our favourite novels.
And I so agree about the value of circles, and I almost see them like a safety valve in society. That's, it's a chance to express how you're feeling, to be able to share experiences rather than bottling it up and feeling isolated in your experience. And I think it's quite hard to put a value on that. but I agree. I think a lot of people see it as a maybe a soft skill, the circle facilitation, but actually it's highly skilled. And I just think that sometimes there's this feeling that talking circles should be free, because, you know, people should be able to communicate. It's a human right to communicate. But to be able to provide these very nurturing spaces, as it stands in society at the moment, takes time and money that if you don't have that reimbursement, might mean you can't do that. You can't create this amazing space. So I think there's so much to weigh up. It's going to be really different for different people depending on their financial situation, whether they're self-employed or employed. You know, what are they juggling with family life? You know, there's lots of factors to consider, but I think when somebody says, oh, they should be free or by donation, they're not always recognizing the journey that somebody's gone on to get to that point of being able to hold space for others.
There's something about, like you were saying, about the value of it. So sometimes circles aren't necessarily called that, because someone coming along might see the value in learning something, but not necessarily the value of the circle element. And so if you want to bring people together and have circle, but it's a very specific area, then often bringing knowledge into it can allow people to feel, yeah, actually, if I'm going to be learning something, then it's worth me paying something. So if you're if you have an area of expertise, but what you'd really love to do is gather people together to talk and listen, you can use that area of expertise to bring them in. And I know that both of us have done that in teaching specializations as far as yoga is concerned, in supporting new parents, supporting the pregnancy community. And really rites of passage. So tweens or people in menopause.
I love that, because I think it's really important. You can see the sort of teaching parts, the knowledge that you're going to share as the hook, kind of why somebody initially comes. But then they might actually feel that the part where they shared experiences was the most powerful of all. But sometimes you've got to get people in the room first. And I really agree that the circle facilitation skills are a tool that can be used in so many different ways. So, yeah, you might already be running workshops, retreats, conferences, but to bring in the circle facilitation will just take the experience to the next level.
So money's a big topic. Both in the book and in the podcast, we really speak to a massive variety of people. So there are some people, for instance, Gavin, the women that I've mentioned, they don't charge a penny for their circles. There are other organisations where the payment comes from corporates or big business, but they really care about what their circle holding is. So Narrative Four, they're a non-profit and they get their money from all sorts of different organisations. And there are individuals who we've spoken to who have been very clear that they needed to be paid for those circles. And people who run women's circles who've got completely burned out because they were really sure that they didn't want to charge them. And at the end of the day, it wasn't sustainable and they burned out doing it. We don't want you to burn out. We want you to really love your circle holding experience. If you are thinking about it from the perspective of, I'd like to earn money from it, that is really okay.
I think sometimes there's this idea that it's almost morally wrong to charge for a talking circle, and we don't agree
definitely
with that.
Definitely not. We would love for everyone to have access to circle. That's why we love the fact that there are charities and organisations that offer it free at the point of access. And also, we think that it's a really valuable service and it's well worth those of us who can afford to pay for.
Thank you so much for joining us today to talk about money.
You've been listening to the Circle Holding Podcast. I've been Tessa Venuti Sanderson.
And I've been Julia Davis. We would love for you to rate and review this podcast. A 5-star rating means more people will find us.
We're the co-authors of the book Circle Holding, A Practical Guide to Facilitating Talking Circles.
Thank you for joining us today.
You can find our trainings at circleholding.org. We hope that you find a community where you can be authentically you very soon.